Hi everyone, I'm Liam and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40, which we actually did last week. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, a centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. This episode is going to be the last of our quality area overview episodes, so I'll be taking an overall look at Quality Area 7, Leadership and Service Management, which we've just covered element by element. This is an opportunity to think about how all the standards and elements of Quality Area 7 work together, and how you can think about approaching quality improvement in this area as a whole. Alright, so you may notice in the background some sounds of rain. We're finally here in Canberra having some beautiful days of rain, and I just couldn't bring myself to close the doors and the windows, so I hope you forgive me. It's just, yes, too nice to hear that sound and smell the fresh air coming in, so there will be that little bit of background sound. But let's start with the big picture. So this is about thinking as an area, Quality Area 7, Leadership and Service Management, what are the big things we want to be thinking about? So the first thing I want to think about here is that concept of governance. So we talked a bit about this, obviously, element by element. And governance is really just about making sure that things are running appropriately, that the systems, the administrative systems, our policies, our procedures, sort of the nuts and bolts of, you know, actually running an early childhood centre are in place. In particular, what I really like thinking about with this area of governance is the relationship between the service, so the early childhood centre, and the approved provider. The organisation or the person or the committee, whoever has overall responsibility for the business. In some cases, in many cases, I should say, that will be the same person. But for a lot of people, it'll be that they work as part of an organisation that runs multiple centres, or they're, you know, working with a voluntary parent committee. So that relationship is hugely important in terms of governance. Is everyone on the same page? Do we have a concept of how and why the service needs to be run? And then particularly in terms of, you know, compliance and adherence with the national law and the national regulations. That's really what we're thinking about. There's obviously a huge place as well here for the policies and procedures that govern the service. And in particular, we want to think about Quality Area 2, children's health and safety, because that has the largest number of components in the law and the regulations. There are a number of very specific things we need to meet there. So that picture around governance is so important for the leadership and service management of the centre. But I think sometimes it can fall to the bottom of the list. I think sometimes because, you know, there's children health and safety, which is so important to be meeting, and then educational program and practice can take up a lot of our thinking, our sort of mental bandwidth in terms of what we're thinking about. This concept of governance and just how the particular operational things of the service being run can often, you know, not necessarily be ignored, but can be not the first thing we might want to think about as we go along with. But it is really important. And the starting point for me would be that relationship between the service and the approved provider. How does the approved provider know what's happening in the service, that the laws and regulations are being met? And how does the service know that the approved provider is supporting them, that there is a system in place? If we have policies and procedures that are going across multiple centres, do we know they're okay? Do they work for our specific service? Are there particular things that that won't work for our specific service and we want to get right? The second point here for me then is that concept of leadership. Obviously, leadership and governance are interlinked and there's a lot of overlap. But leadership for me is really about, you know, that person who is taking the direction and the leadership role within the service. The big thing here, I think, for, particularly in this concept of Quality Area 7, that service management piece, is really about balancing the sort of what we might call the operational, so the day-to-day running of the service, rosters, ordering food, all those different kinds of things, the 50 million jobs that centre directors have to do. So balancing that operational piece with what we might call the pedagogical piece, which is really about quality outcomes for children. The first thing to think about here is thinking about them as sort of two sides of the same coin, or seeing them as reflective of each other. That operations isn't separate from pedagogy, or operations doesn't undermine pedagogy, but they actually complement each other, and that many, many, many times, we can look at things through both an operational and a pedagogical lens. You know, an example here might be our approach to quality area one, particularly given that there's often an educational leadership component to this as well. We might have a separate educational leader in our service. Now, that's obviously a very pedagogically focused role. That person will be working with teams of educators to support the particular review, planning, implementation of educational programs for children. But there are huge operational considerations around that role. Obviously, the idea of, you know, hiring someone, rostering someone in, you know, making sure they meet all the employment requirements. How do they have time to spend with educators? That's an operational consideration, making sure there's cover for people to come off the floor. When do people have programming time? I hope that sort of gives an example that these, we sometimes think of these two things as separate, but they're really not. They're kind of, we really want to think about how can we see them as lenses on the work we do, and that pedagogical and operational considerations aren't more or less important than one and the other, but they're intrinsic parts of the work we do. So for me, leadership is about kind of balancing those or even combining them or being able to move in and out of how we view those particular things and supporting those we work with to see that as well. Because using the same example, one of the things we might hear in centres is that, you know, it's difficult to get time off the floor, and that means that, you know, and that's because, you know, maybe the director isn't focusing enough on the operational considerations. We're only focusing on the pedagogical, or the other way around, that, you know, that there's too much expected of people, that I have to complete, you know, so many newsletters or something a month, and, you know, that's not fair. But if we encourage people to stop thinking of these two things as separate, that means we can have a really sort of focused and reflective team working in particular things. Obviously, also from a leadership perspective, there's the, you know, there's that concept of, you know, decision making. So that there is someone at the service who is making decisions about the operation of the service that are in the best interest of children and families and educators. And it's important that person, you know, really takes on that role confidently. I think that's something that we are encouraged in the sector to not take on, you know, particularly strong approaches to leadership, particularly if we've come up through the sector, we've come up as educators and team leaders, maybe then as assistant director. And taking on director's roles, we're really cognizant and we really think a lot about how people view us, that people might see us as bossy and those kind of things. But the role is so important that it needs someone who's taking that strong leadership focus. Someone is the decision maker. And then from a leadership perspective, then also role modeling practice, you know, being in classrooms with children, this concept of off-the-floor directors or directors who only spend time in the office, those models can never work, and that director won't have the credibility to work with their team. They need to be seen, to be engaged with children, to be engaged with educators, to be engaged with families so that they're credible, but also that so educators can see that practice and can model their own improvements in their own work on what they're seeing from the more experienced and qualified people in the space. And then there's also about embodying the philosophy of the service. That's really one of the, you know, the leader's key jobs is to take that approach to the philosophy and really be seeing it in practice, seeing it in day-to-day, you know, engagements and interactions in the classroom. That's a really important part of it. And then the last thing here for me for the big picture is this concept of continuous improvement. This really underpins the entirety of the National Quality Standard. It's really the sort of the foundation of everything we've talked about over the last year or so. It's been going for quite a while. But that's, you know, really important from a leadership and service management perspective, this idea that we don't get to a particular point. You know, maybe we even get an exceeding rating in all seven quality areas, so we then apply for the excellent rating and get that. What the NQS tells us and what we know from quality approaches to service provision is that means we shouldn't just stop and we go, okay, we've done that, now we can rest, we can relax, we don't have to do anything more. The idea of self-assessment and continuous improvement means that we're always working to improve the work we do for children. Can that be difficult and frustrating occasionally? Yes, it feels like we're kind of running a race that we never reach the finish line of. But it's about removing those ideas of a race and a finish line. This isn't a competition. It's an ongoing process. It's something we do every day to go, you know, how can we do this a little bit better when things don't go well? How can we take lessons from it and move on and go and improve hopefully down the track? And obviously that feeds into the philosophy and the quality improvement plan as well. So, you know, for the big picture for this this quality area, those are the things I think about a lot. That approach to governance, the leadership of the service, obviously, and then how the service approaches continuous improvement. All right, so we start to wrap up these overview episodes with sort of three things to focus on. There were a lot of sort of guides. There were some suggestions from me throughout the look at the previous elements throughout this quality area. But these are more just sort of things to think about from a leadership perspective, but even for educators as well. The first thing for me for this quality area is professional development. This is so important for both educators and the leaders themselves. The center directors often put themselves last in terms of accessing professional development. It's really important that everyone in the service is getting access to that. And what we want is for it not to be ad hoc, so we don't sort of wait for a particular workshop to come up and then just book people into these one-off workshops. We really need to have a plan, both as a centre and overall PD plan, I think is fantastic, but also individual plans for educators. They're actually required under the National Quality Standard. But really thinking about what are the areas the services want to improve on, particularly that's been informed by that self-assessment, by the quality improvement plan, by the philosophy, and really having a long-term approach to ongoing improvement in that area. So again, not the one-off workshop, but how can we make sure we're engaging with these concepts regularly and often? Professional development, you know, it's the closest thing we have to the one thing that supports services to improve. But again, thinking beyond the one-off workshop, thinking beyond subscribing to, you know, one particular webinar, how can we really engage with particular people or organizations or mentors or community, you know, resources to engage in long-term learning on particular topics. The next thing to focus on for me is really the key documents of the sector. The key documents of the service, I should say. You know, starting with the philosophy. Is it meaningful? Is it relevant? Has it been reviewed? Is it something that people discuss and talk about? Is it something that people refer to in their documentation? How can we make it more meaningful if it's not any of those things? That process of review is really important. Who's involved? You know, is it this 5-page document that no one can list, or is it a 1-page document that's just kind of value statements that sound nice but aren't in practice? Getting that document right is really important, and we had a whole episode on that a little bit earlier in this quality area. The quality improvement plan, obviously, again, without going into too much detail, but really using that as a useful document, not just as a we have to get the quip done. How can you change it and use it so it's something that you actually go back to time and time again? And then things like, obviously, the code of conduct, all of the induction procedures are hugely important. Do you have a document that explains your expectations for working with children? Do you have a document that explains your approach to child protection and child safety? All these kind of things are really important because they can be referred back to, they can be used by educators over and over again. So these sort of key documents are really important, particularly for the induction. And then for me, it's really the self-reflection piece. How do we engage in that process of self-assessment and continuous improvement? The most important thing, and unfortunately one of the most challenging things, which is why we know it's important, is regular meetings with your team, both individually and in groups. I entirely sit here knowing this, how difficult this can be, but it really does fundamentally change practice if you can get in the habit, even if it is, you know, 5-10 minutes where you can grab them talking with people about practice, about particular things, engaging in feedback and remaining up to date with the sector is a really big part of self-reflection when you have, and you know, for me, maybe not following so much of the Facebook groups where, you know, particular things sort of seem to spiral out of control, but using the key sites of the sector, as CEQA, you know, Early Childhood Australia, I'm really looking for those, positive, strengths-based approach to remaining up to date with the sector is a really important part of service provision. All right, and we wrap up, as we always do, with a look at the exceeding theme. So CEQA now provides guidance for how services can obtain that exceeding rating across standards and quality areas. So the first exceeding theme is practice is embedded in service operations. You know, for me, this means that we're seeing lots of evidence that the service, that educators, that leaders are referring back to the key documents of the service we were just talking about. That is something that people can see in classrooms, in discussions, in the way educators work, that you can really see how the service operates, the philosophy of the service, how the service's code of conduct, all those particular kind of things. And that for me, again, really informed by regular clear meetings with your team is the best way to do that. The second theme is practice is informed by critical reflection. For me, this is particularly important when we think about how we respond maybe to incidents when they happen, when a child's maybe been injured or there's been a family complaint. we want to really move away from that idea that we ignore, obviously, those incidents, or that we just look for blame. We look for a particular person who may have done something wrong. We want to move on to that area of really responding as a team, using these incidents, which will always happen. We are human beings working with small human beings with not fantastic ratios. There will always be incidents. There is no way to get rid of them all. So it's about, how do we respond as a team? How do we use them as learning opportunities? And how do we sort of destigmatize these incidents? I've been thinking a lot about this in the sector recently. I think we default back to shame and, you know, this shouldn't have happened, and how do we blame, when we know it's an inevitable part of working with young children, as they're learning to grow and develop, they're learning, you know, social skills, they're learning, you know, physical development skills. There will always be bumps and knocks, and there will be mistakes as well. How do we destigmatize them? How do we talk about them without shaming people? And, you know, the more we do that is just by making them more open and talking through, and when people make mistakes, supporting them through that process. And then the last exceeding theme is, practice is shaped by meaningful engagement with families and or the community. There's a lot of different ways to do this. You know, we might look at information nights, regular emails going out, providing, you know, family handbooks and those particular kind of things. Beyond the specifics of this one, though, for me, there's a really big question which comes, you know, what will you and won't you compromise on as a service? So meaningful engagement with families doesn't mean we just do what they say. Every family in your service will have a different approach to how they would run an early childhood centre. So you can't just listen to everything they all say. You have to have an approach. You have to have values. You have to have that philosophy. And then it becomes, where is compromise appropriate and where is it not? You know, particular approaches to working with children. You know, that's a really, really interesting one, where if you have positive strengths-based approaches to behavior management, that can be challenging for families who go, well, why don't you just punish them and put them in time out? And that's not what we do at the service. So compromise isn't appropriate there. But how we inform families about that is really important. All right, thanks everyone. A bit of a longer episode, which is good, because this is our last sort of regular episode of Exploring the NQS. I did a big thank you to everyone last week, so I won't repeat it here. But I hope everyone's enjoyed this overall look at Quality Area 7. We'll be back next week, hopefully, with an overview of the NQS sort of as a big whole and my reflections on this journey over the last, you know, year and a bit. So thanks everyone who's been listening. And until next week, it's goodbye from me.